If you'd like to open it up, any questions or contributions from anyone?
Just to reference what you said earlier about the lack of major stakes within the Communist Party in the first 4 decades, really. Is this something similar to other Communist parties in the West, or is it a unique British thing?
In the West? No, I think it's fairly standard. I can't comment about France and Italy and Spain because I don't know them well enough, but I don't think there was a great deal of a split in them. Oh, sorry, he does that.
That's right.
Yeah. You want to go on? Yeah.
No, just to follow up on that, yeah, that's logically correct. As you know, to make choices, tend to split. I mean, I'm struggling to think of a major split in any of the Europe parties. You know, I think there's been a fairly standard Euros versus Tankies in Western European kind of parties. Obviously, you know, if you try to split from the party behind the line, you got shot. So there didn't tend to be many splits, you know. But, you know, can I say I'm a little bit alarmed at the anti-intellectualism in your talk?
I'm sorry about that.
I'm quite keen on the reason.
Are you?
I think apart from our own organisation, they've contributed some of the most important and richest parts of what's called the English Marxist tradition. I wouldn't say that because I'm not a social historian. That's my bag. So, I don't know if anybody else is going to go into the actual politics of these people later, or I'll shut up.
Before we go any further, I'd just like to hand this around for anybody who wants to be able to our names. And also we could pass the collection round. This is for funds. Obviously, if you don't want to contribute, you don't have to, you can tell anybody. Alex, you were wanting to ask a question.
Probably this might be a bit of a silly question, but it's just about Stalin in general. I guess with North Korea as well, they worshipped Kim Jong-il. And in Russia, they worshipped Stalin a bit. They used to, for China, they used to worship now. Could you almost say that they treat him like a religion?
Yeah. Perhaps not so much in, in the traditional ones, but certainly North Korea's got a very odd relationship with their leaders, with their things. Because I got some stuff from North Korea today, and what was quite interesting was they actually have a new year. They started their calendar, the North Korean yearing system. Year numbering system actually starts with the birth of Kim Il-sung. And what you say, I think that's a quite an odd religious thing. That's not kind of really... perhaps it's just because it's such a remote place, so different from our understanding, that it is quite weird to experience that. And I think you're right, there is a religious element in that.
It's still head of state, isn't it? It's still the official head of state.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's something that would, I don't think that's very, even by Western communist standards, that's something that's quite off the ball, isn't it?
And of course, there's a movement in Russia at the moment to try and get Stalin sainted as well, so that's
surprising. Yeah. that's dreadful.
There's a strong movement within the Orthodox Church to canonise Stalin, to make it sacred.
Oh, right. Well, they obviously don't know the history then, do they? Because he was, like I said, about the militant atheist.
He brought the church in battle, didn't he?
He did indeed, yeah.
And there's also the mummification of Lenin as well, which could be considered a sort of semi-religious act.
Yeah.
We were talking about Peter's revelation going back in the early days, it's in the wake of the Bolshevik Revolution, the Communist Party of Scotland. John Stagg.
Ah, no, oh, yes. Yeah, that was the, I think it was called Communist Labour Party.
Yeah.
They weren't technically speaking nationalist insofar as that, you know, all of them have got, because of Lenin's relationship with nationalism, there was a certain element of nationalism there, because I think Lenin had a certain positive view of nationalism that we wouldn't share, and I think that the Maclean party did, but Maclean didn't go into the Communist Party, I've got to say. No, he didn't. John Maclean didn't go into the Communist Party, he opted out, because I mean he was, I think, one of the what you might call the left communists, and I think that to sacrifice his beliefs, Sylvia Pankhurst was very much on the edge of the Communist Party, and she was expelled very early on, and I think John McLean would have been the same. He wouldn't have been willing to say, you know, I'll do whatever the party says if I have to, and I don't think he did.
Well, in that period, a little bit later, there was even comment on the Navarra, who was the Communist MP for Battersea.
Yes, he was, yeah.
I mean, most people often think the first one was the name? The one in 1935, the Scottish...
Gallagher, Willie Gallagher, yeah.
And then a Phil Baratti for But there was this Sack Navarra, and... He got quite a lot of votes,
didn't he? Yeah, he was quite popular, but he was standing on the Labour platform, and that was before they'd had an opportunity to basically, you know, expel them to get their act in order. Because the Labour Party, of course, itself, in those days, it itself was kind of like evolving into a party, with an organisational structure. Yeah. And so there was a sort of, you know, so that they had an adjustment period. Sack Latava, of course, he weren't the first Communist MP. He was the first one who was elected. But in the Communist convention thing, there's actually a man called Colonel L.J. Malone. I think it was a strange Malone. He's got a very odd double-barreled name. And he actually started out as liberal, of all things. And he was the first Communist MP. A colonel.
Would have been touchable. I mean, what's your view of the intellectuals who were in the CP?
Well, I mean,
they can't be written off,
can they? Well, because he said so, I'm not going to say anything more against them. I was only really against them because he obviously didn't approve of me or Helen, as we were obviously far too working class for him, I would say. It's okay if it's on paper, but, I was quite surprised that he wasn't, you know, I went to university, I got my degree, so, you know, obviously that wasn't good enough, because everyone, you know, you can get a degree with doing anything these
Maybe
days.
Maybe he just didn't like you.
I think he didn't like me, probably. But, no, I
don't know the feeling, actually.
But I don't. Like I said, I think that one of the greatest, not errors, but the greatest disservices that people have done to socialism and communism, whatever you'd like to call it, is to make it into an intellectual movement. And there is this thing. I mean, I know you'll say against it, but I think there is this thing that socialism is something you write about, you don't do. And I think there is this thing. You don't think so. You don't think that people like John Savile and people like that, they're into this, they're into writing about it, not doing it.
I mean, I think possibly the problem you might have with them kids is that they weren't members of the SNGB.
No, that's not...
They were active. I think, they may not have done activity that we particularly support as an organisation, but I mean, Adrian Thompson, for example, quite apart from his work in the Open University, was an active member of CND.
Yes, he was, wasn't he? I'll let him off the hook there.
But I mean, these people helped them kind of preserve, especially in social historical terms, the histories of working class development, radicalism, militancy. It's an important work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not to say that it's just about writing about it. You know, ultimately, propaganda and the ideas that we try to communicate to people have to come from somewhere. They have to have some kind of grounding. If you're supposed to be a historical materialist, it's not just because wouldn't socialism be a nice idea? Okay, part of that is theoretical, just clarifying ideas. You know, you are right. People put all sorts of points and labels on it, and it's essentially the process of clarifying your ideas. You know, being able to talk about them and being able to confidently debate people. So you know, so say what the left Keynesian economist was coming here, or what was the point? You know, like a couple of years ago when Richard debated that neoliberal, you know, the libertarian sort of guy. All right, you know, if you don't have basic sort of theoretical grasp of knowledge, there's no way you're going to be able to make a case against them, other than getting up at, you know, like Zeitgeist and saying, look, we could build some nice buildings, it'll be really nice. No, which just doesn't cut mustard. Yeah, it really doesn't. So I think it's important, and one of the reasons why people are keeping Thompson's historical work is really, really important, because he puts working class people and their activity at the centre of social change, all right? Not these huge impersonal sort of forces, economic forces and whatever. You know, I mean, The Making of the English Working Class is a classic book, and I advise anyone to read it, because it's about people, you know, educating themselves and also carrying that over into as much practice as they can do in their everyday lives. Now, there's a rich tradition of that in British social history, as I'll probably rant on about when we're doing this with the English question. But, you know, so I mean, I think the contribution, actually, to a wider Marxist current. Yeah, the English Marxist current is very interesting. It's you know, a lot of members here that would have read some of these books. Yeah, we're not remotely hostile to these sorts of things. It's putting working class people and their activity back at the centre of social change. Or, you know, if you go further back, it's a different social change.
So perhaps I was a little unfair there on John the Circle. A little unfair on John the Circle.
What do you think about, I mean, the actual wider kind of, say, theoretical idea that I've heard expressed is, and this is something I certainly agree with in Europe and many parts of the world, official communist parties actually acted to deaden and demilitant, to basically demobilise class struggle. You know, they were instrumental, say, in France in 68. The French Communist Party was instrumental in telling people, no, don't have a revolution, don't take to the streets. Support de Gaulle, your one France sort of president. You know, I guess these awful sort of people that might suggest that there's another world beyond capitalism. And I mean, that ban gets replicated all the way through official Communist Party movements. A lot of the old CPs in this country used to be very keen on kind of dampening down things and just... But if I'll, you know, just take a new trade union, don't occupy that place, they will strike, you know, because they can control it. Again, maybe I'm being slightly harsh on that, because I think the CPB nowadays are just a bunch of kind of homeless Benite leftists, essentially. And as far as it goes, they're all right, really. And you're right, they are getting more young people interested again.
Each one of the parties of meeting. Not only accepted independence of Workers' Party in elections and rejected it or accepted it and accepted it.
Not sure.
I mean, the seventh and eighth part of the program that the Socialist Party of Labour says the Workers' Party should be independent in elections. Which one have accepted this previously or rejected it later or accepted it not? We have about 26 parties.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of them. Yeah, I think we're very much from a different position from all of these parties. We're very much separate from a totally different perspective. Have I understood you?
No, I mean the seventh and eighth part of the program of the Socialist Party of Labour, that is, Workers' Party should not support labour elections. Yes.
Yeah.
Except as part of this that apparently still accept this.
Right, it's a Labour Party question, is it? Right.
Which one supports the Labour Party?
Which one supports the Labour Party?
Yes.
Basically, I think, with the exception of the Maoists, I don't think the anti-revisionist groups. I don't think they particularly support Labour, but most of the others do. The NCP certainly supports it. So does the CPB. They're all. I would say that's the big division between supporting Labour and not supporting it. And the ones who don't support it are obviously theoretically somewhat similar to us. Yeah.
You mean nearly all of them support Labour in elections?
And then there's a.
Where they don't have their own candidate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But some of them support Labour more than others. Some of them are very obvious Labour supporters. Others of them are not so obvious Labour supporters.
Alex?
This meeting, I know a lot of our meetings are about not necessarily the Socialist Party of Great Britain, but other parties as well, like, for example, it's just about all the pseudo-socialist parties in the UK. Do all of these meetings... about, okay, if I ask all these meetings about these pseudo-socialist parties, do they Does it help us? Does it sort of help benefit us as a party and sort of help us gather new ideas about how to sort of like capitalism create a socialist world?
What you're thinking? I think it when you've got stuff that you can see, I think it puts the issues in front of you, and you know, it gives you a sense of history and what that there has been something else that's there.
I mean, yeah, there will be sort of meetings to be able to sort of contribute towards us. I mean, like, would it be? Does this all? Well, sort of trying to say, does this do these meetings? Do they sort of help us as a party and help us sort of? Do we ever get any new ideas in these sort of meetings?
Well, I think it's more to get ideas in your mind as much as anything else.
Yes.
And so it's certainly help me appreciate more that there are things out there.
Yes, I'm not being hostile or anything.
That's right, I hope
it's all
right
if I ask that.
Oh, yeah, ask any questions.
Just
want to
help the party progress, and
we
just want to see what would be best for us.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion it's a lot of these things are that less short. You know, I mean, as I alluded to earlier on, sometimes these official kind of communist groups kind of help demobilise parts of sort of militant organisation in some respect. But what I would say is that, I mean, at least even in a very sort of maybe the base form or whatever, but the people who are in these organisations and in Trotskyist organisations are probably a bit more class conscious than the average member of the public. So in that sense, you know, you've at least got a starting point with them. You know, you're not, because to be honest, some people, when you start discussing socialist ideas, you may as well be talking about science fiction or stuff that's going on the moon or something like that, because they just don't have the reference points and maybe even the direct experiences of things like even the sort of trade union membership organisation, things like that, which are all rapidly fading. I mean, I've had discussions with people I work with where they go, hang on, what's the difference between left wing and right wing? I mean, you know, this is the level of the sort of consciousness that some people are at. You know, I mean, they're quite, you know, that we're having a quite interesting sort of discussion about, you know, Russian monarchy, you know, republicanism and so forth. But, you know, when you face with people who don't know what the difference between left wing and right wing is, you know, what you say, and you know, at what level you pitch these ideas. Like I say, I mean, I'd argue that some of these papers at least can achieve a wider understanding. And I don't think there are some of us in this organisation, such as myself and Steve, who come to the SVGB via left wing organisations. So, you know, I mean, I would certainly say that in one sense or another, as I was growing up, they'd be. It helped me sort out some of my ideas and activity. Because, you know, basically these groups sort of teach you what works and what doesn't. They mainly teach you what doesn't work. And people, what makes me bang my head against the wall whenever I read of the you know, in Weekly Worker of the latest left-wing unity initiative, going, you've tried it before, you know, and so at least they can point to stuff that's gone wrong. So in that sense, I mean, I think they're probably worth sort of keeping up, even if they don't want to. Even if they consider us vipers, you know, fraternal relations with them, personal level, not an organisation.
I disagree with that.
Of course you do. I
don't think they do anything positive for the working class at all. These other parties of capitalism, mostly. I think Rob makes some good points. I mean, yes, I've spoken to various Trotskyists who are in parties which advocate the running of capitalism and the maintenance of capitalism. But still, at the base, you know, that they're kind of, maybe they're not too keen on it. They just think it has to be done. You know what I mean? And even if they see the same end goal, I think they're just confused, but the propaganda that they put out about running capitalism themselves for the workers, on behalf of the workers, only furthers maintenance of capitalism. If difference between us and them is we say revolution is the only way. You can't run capitalism in the workers' interests. It must be a revolution. Whereas they say, well, let's try running capitalism for a bit, we'll have a nicer capitalism, and then one day we'll get around to actually doing something different. So no, I think that's very false consciousness, to be honest.
But is there a fair representation of the position of its evenings?
I think it is, to be honest. I mean, all you have to do is look at some of the stuff that's been passed around. I mean, in some of the regions, it's to, you know, nationalise banks and to for a better NHS. These are all things that are late Bible. And to be honest, I mean, 1960s, it was conservative policy to nationalise. Can't remember which industry was being nationalised.
Rolls Royce.
Rolls Royce. Conservative policy to nationalise Rolls Royce. It's not a particularly revolutionary. It's not revolutionary in the least bit. So what they're saying to workers is, you know, there is an alternative to capitalism. It's capitalism 2.0. It's capitalism with a happy face. Whether they think they're saying that or not, that is what they're saying.
But Marxists always had difficulties with the welfare state, because it's a dialectical thing. Welfare state, on one hand, yes, they put a nice face on capitalism, and in many ways it enables us to live more peacefully with capitalism, which is obviously what our aim. But at the same time, whenever the NHS or the welfare state is attacked by the right neoliberal project demos, everyone is up in arms, I'm sure, here as well, every Marxist. So at the same time, you criticise the welfare state as something that accommodates capitalism, and then you rush to its defence when it's being attacked by the right. And I presumably, those other left-wing organisations that we're trying to discredit now, fairly or unfairly, would say that this is a dialectical process. Yes, the welfare state is not an end, but by fighting for maintaining some of those social rights and promoting values such as solidarity and being engaged even in this we move closer towards, I don't know, class consciousness or something like that.
Yeah.
So, and I feel that us discouraging everyone else as people who enforce capitalist practices is a little bit unfair on them.
I think
whoever then is, that's already.
Yeah. I think you mentioned earlier you're a teacher, politics teacher, is that correct? If you taught your class mathematics, you would get some very fine mathematicians at the end of it, but you wouldn't get many people who know about politics. If a Trotskyist group says only puts forward plans for reforms and plans for managing capitalism, they're not going to get many revolutionaries at the end of it. They're going to get more reformists. And this is what's been going on for a long, long time. And that's why those parties are just reformists. They're no different than Clause 4 Labour Party, which had to acquire the workers the full value of their labour by hand or by brain, you know, by fist or by brain, I think. So they're really no different from that. I mean, we've seen where this reformist labour movement gets us. It gets us to all these wars, capitalist wars, and cutbacks on the welfare state anyway. If the SWP or Militant or any of the other Trotskyist groups replace Labour as the main party of the left, they would have to do exactly the same thing.
Can I just interrupt? There's other people waiting, actually.
Sorry.
Continue this afterwards.
Sorry.
By all means. Adam, you want to
say? We might have asked a question here.
Oh, sorry, you go first.
Well, let's speak on different subjects. On the subject of the meeting, we don't just hold meetings on left-wing parties. We hold meetings on right-wing parties. We had one on UKIP the other day, and it's in this month's Socialist Stand. So we take on all come on, not particularly slingly out in left-wing parties. And we debated with open supporters of capitalism as well, but in fact more times we debated with them than we have to. But on the general issue, the problem is that they speak the same language as us, they use the same words as us, and therefore we find it easier to talk to and argue with them. But part of the problem is they don't mean the same thing by nearly any of the words. I mean, obviously not by socialism or communism. They mean nationalization or something by socialism. I mean, they used to exist in Russia. But even another basic term, like working class, the definitions are different. I mean, you know, they would think working class, people who work in factories or live on house in the States, whereas we say working class, anybody who's dependent on working for a wage or a salary, which is 80-90% of the population of the country. So we can appear to have a dialogue with them, but only because the language is the same. I mean, I'm the same. I was a left-winger before I became a socialist. And like him, I enjoy studying all these left-wing groups and things like that with a big collection of terms. But, you know, I agree with Alex. It's self-indulgent, really. I mean, it's not... which we're talking to. I can't say hundred people. And we do as well.
Well, sorry about that. I think you need to know the kind of that these people have a history, and they have a history like ours, if you know what I mean. There's a world out there, if you like. I think it's very easy for us to say, you're all reformists, you know what I mean? And I think that's one of the things that I think that the party does. It says you're all reformists as a blanket term. And I think it's important to say that, you know, people out there.
Would that include the Labour Party?
Yeah, it's just about the... I know we've used the word left-wing a lot today, but I think when we use the word left-wing, because we call ourselves left-wing, and we call other groups like the Communist Party of Britain left-wing, I think it's almost trying to make us associate ourselves more with them than what we would with like right-wing parties. I mean, I know I see the Socialist Party of Great Britain personally as we're just as few similarities with like Communist Party of Britain as what they'd be with, I don't know, UKIP. Like, because I see, well, yeah, that's just what I see. So I think using the word left-wing, I think it's kind of a bad term personally, because it's almost trying to say that we're not different to the pseudo-socialist parties.
Can I answer this? Because I can do this one. I can do this one.
Yeah.
We don't call ourselves left-wing.
Oh, good.
We say that there's the left-wing of capitalism and the right-wing of capitalism, and you know, they're something distinct. Okay. You know, we're the real deal stuff. So we don't call ourselves left-wing.
Oh, okay.
Though historically, you can regard us as a... Historically, you can regard us as part of the left wing, if you like, historically speaking, because that's our origins. But it has become something different in this party.
No,
the old phrase for that is non-market socialist. But we would sort of see ourselves more in the tradition with, or at least close to people like anarcho-syndicalists or Yankee Communist Federation, people like that, rather than saying we're left wing. Although
we have
some common origins, as we've discussed
about it, some common interests, I suppose.
You?
Yes, there's a couple of things that leave out of the left-wing thing. But something they said, I've been over here about the welfare state, like we support the welfare state and criticise it, but... argue against things happening to it. But I was just recalling that right from the outset the party criticised the welfare state type reforms, and I recall the pamphlet after the Beveridge report, which was entitled Beveridge Reorganises Poverty. That was the attitude to what was happening. You know, family allowances meant that they didn't have to pay the same amount of wage to men that didn't have children. And so it cheapened the wages. And you know, it used to be said that the health service was getting the workers fit to get back to work. You know, and it was always I'm going to say an inferior service, but I mean that was the idea of it. And, which doesn't mean that everyone who advocated it was, you know, was of the same opinion. It certainly had its uses. On the value of the meeting subject, because we always question the kind of topics that we're going to have meetings about. I mean, the ideas of socialism, they essentially have to be discussed. It's not something you can wave banners or have slogans, and it's got to be, people have got to understand what the object is, what this great transformation of society. We have to know what's involved. It has to be discussed. So we try to have meetings on different aspects. The idea always is that we want to attract people to come to the meetings. We don't only depend on having meetings to come to. We get out to have meetings, to other people's meetings, have stalls out, take meetings where we can. The tiny party, we have to do the best we can with the resources that we've got. But the idea of holding meetings is to discuss current issues, historical issues that bear on current issues, talk about socialism, how we envisage that the society could be organised. So, you know, we always question what we're going to hold meetings about. The aim is to have discussion both during the meeting and informally afterwards over a cup of tea, whatever, to people may find it easier to talk, you know, on an individual basis. But we're always questioning what we do and you know, the value of the kind of things that we're doing.
Well, on that note, looks like we may as well adjourn to the lack of freshness upstairs, actually. Right, thank you, everybody. I'm Keith.